Masechet Baba Mesia Daf Lamed Dalid. The Mishnah right above said that if you have a cow owner that gives this cow to a shomer, this is going away, can you watch this cow for me? And let's say it's a shomer chinam, he's doing it for free. And the cow is stolen or it gets lost. And so normally the shomer chinam can make a vow that he was not negligent and then he doesn't have to pay anything. But this guy says, I don't want to make a vow, I'd rather just pay. So he pays the value of the cow, $1,000. And then turns out the cow is found, the thief is found, and the thief now pays double. Who gets the double? The answer is the shomer, because we assume that the owner of the cow transfers the ownership of the cow to the shomer, right? He says, you gave me $1,000. You know what? I'm happy to transfer it to you, and therefore all future benefits of the cow, even though right now the cow is gone, it's stolen, but all the benefits of the cow also are transferred over, including the collecting a double or even a four and five times payment if the thief slaughtered or sold it. Now we have a question. Matkifla Rami Bar Chama, v'ha en adam makne davar shelo ba'la olam. Rami Bar Chama says, what's the mechanism here? Because we have a halacha that you cannot transfer something that does not exist in the world. And right now, the double payment does not exist. The cow is stolen. It's not here. We don't know who the thief is. We don't have the thief. He hasn't paid double. And so how can the owner of the cow transfer the right to collect the double? How can you transfer a right? It's a right of a future thing that may come, maybe won't come, but does not right now. That money is not in existence. So how can you transfer it? And that's according to the opinion that says that you cannot transfer something that doesn't right now exist. And even the opinion of Rabbi Meir, he says you can transfer something that has not yet come into the world. Even Rabbi Meir only says that you can do that for dates that grow on a date palm. As I own some dates, I can transfer to you the crop, next year's crop. That is permitted, but that's only because it's something that you know is going to come. Every year, the dates grow, and the tree is here. You know exactly where they're going to come from. It's very predictable. And so in that case, it's really all about psychology. Can a person have in mind, that I want to transfer to you something? If it's something very ephemeral, something that doesn't exist, then what sense is there of what are you thinking about when you're transferring? So if it's dates of next season, which is something very concrete that I can imagine because it happens on a regular basis. And Bimir says, yes, you can buy those from now and they'll be yours. But here, it's the future payment of a thief should he be found and he doesn't admit to it, but pays double, right? As we say here, aval hacha, mi emar demi ganeva. V'im timse lomar demi ganeva, mi emar demi shtekach ganav. V'im shtekach ganav, mi emar demi shalem. Dilma modeh u mi petar. Ibn Bimir would say, in this case, who says, first of all, it's going to be stolen? And even if it is stolen, who says you're going to find the thief? And even if you find the thief, who says he's going to pay double? Maybe he will admit to it. Maybe he'll come and say, listen, I admit I stole it. And someone who admits does not pay a fine. And there won't be a double payment. So there's so many ifs. And therefore, it's hard to imagine that at the time that the owner of the cow gives the cow over to the shomer, he has in mind implicitly, listen, should, I'm transferring this to you now, and should it happen that it gets stolen and you pay me instead of making a vow, and he's found, and he pays double, then that double will be transferred to you, right? This is way too many ifs. Too theoretical to effectuate an actual transfer. That is the challenge of Rami Bar Chama. Rava has an answer. Amar Rava, Nasa keomer lo lich shetigane v'tirse utshalemeni hare parati kinuha lecha me'achshav. Rava says it works retroactively. At the time that the owner of the cow hands over the cow to the shomer, it's as if he's saying, you don't have to say this all explicitly, but it's kind of implicit in the deal. Listen, should this get stolen, and should you decide to pay me because you don't want to make a vow, and then should because you don't make a vow, and at that point, it will be decided that the cow is transferred to you from now. So therefore, this is not davar shelo ba'olam. The cow exists in the world. It's right here, right now. So at the time that the owner gives it, the cow, over to the shomer, he says, listen, I'm giving to you this as a deposit, just to hold on to me, shomer, but I retain ownership. However, I'm agreeing, I'm telling you from now that I will agree that if it gets stolen and you pay me, then this transfer will retroactively be a full transfer of ownership of this cow. Therefore, if the thief is found and he pays double, it's your cow. But I'm not transferring to you the future possibility of collecting the double. That doesn't exist. I'm actually transferring you the cow from now, and it'll be yours. That's how Rava says is the mechanism. Rabbi Zera says there's a problem with this, because if it works retroactively, then the shomer should even be able to keep the fleece and the offspring. But the Baraita says that the fleece and the offspring are not kept by the shomer, but rather go to the original owner. In other words, any fleece or any offspring that it has in the meantime, the original owner gets. But if the transfer happened retroactively from the time that the owner originally gave it to the shomer, then the shomer should be able to keep the fleece and the offspring. So the retroactive answer doesn't work. Ela amar bizera nasa kemer lochus migizoteha uv ladoteha. Bizera says, no, it's as if one's saying, again, all this is implicit in the deal, that at the time that the owner of the cow gives it over to the shomer, he's saying, listen, if it gets stolen and you end up paying me, and you decide to pay me, then this cow is transferred to you from now, except for its fleece and its offspring that I want to keep. That's how the Bizera will get around his own. That's how the Bizera can answer that question. You have to add an exception clause. But now we ask about that. Umay paska. Setama demilita shebachada tama alma ve'abid inish demakne shebachami gufa la'abid inish demakne. So how can you decide that without qualification? Mishnah didn't say that he says, I'll transfer you this, but not that. Like, why would you assume that a person would make such a distinction that he's willing to hand over the cow from now retroactively, the cow itself, that includes the right to collect double, but not the offspring and the fleece? Why would you make such a distinction? And the answer is yes. Typically, a person will agree to transfer over profit that comes from elsewhere, but profit that comes from the body of the animal itself, a person would not want to transfer. It just makes sense. Even if they don't say this explicitly, the owner of the cow is going to be like, listen, this is my cow. I want you to hold on to it. I want to keep any offspring or fleece that it produces right in the meantime till I get it back. I want to keep that no matter what. However, since it's more far-fetched, he's willing to transfer the cow should it get stolen and you pay me for the... So then any other ownership rights that will come from elsewhere, meaning from the thief that will pay double or four and five, that he doesn't have in mind. And so he doesn't have in mind that he needs to have it, and therefore he's willing to transfer that over. That's the difference between them. Or another version of what we just said, Rava has a different, slightly different answer, that it doesn't work retroactively from the time of the giving of the cow from the owner to the shomer, but rather it's as if at the time that the owner gives the cow to the shomer, he says, or he implies, should it get stolen and you pay me, then it will be yours from a few minutes before it gets stolen, right? I'm giving you this thing today, and let's say it gets stolen next week on Tuesday at 3:00. So saying, listen, should that happen, then I'm telling you from now that right before 10:00, it will be transferred to you. And that way, anything that happens from then on will be yours, including if the thief is found and he pays double. Good. So this avoids the problem that we just said of everything that grows in the meantime. So we say, what's the difference between the first version of Rava and the second version? Two answers. One is the question of Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera's question only works, is only is only applies to the first answer of Dava, because there the transfer happens retroactively from the time that he first gave it, and therefore anything that grew from it should belong to the Shomer. But the Braita says it doesn't, and it means that I had to say, oh, yeah, you have to assume an exception. But this will not be a problem for this statement of Dava, this version of Dava, because here it belongs to the original owner the entire time until right before it gets stolen, and therefore the original owner will keep its offspring and the fleece. A second difference between the two is if the animal happens to be standing in a marsh, it's out there, it got lost, or it's feeding in the marsh at the time, a few minutes before it gets stolen. Because of that, there's no mechanism for the Shomer to acquire it a few minutes before it got stolen. You see, if it's in the courtyard of the Shomer and then it gets stolen, so we say a few minutes before you acquire it. What's the mechanism of acquiring it? It's in his courtyard, so the Shomer could acquire it through his courtyard. However, if it's in the marsh a few minutes before, then according to the second answer of Rava, the Shomer has no mechanism to acquire it as his own, and therefore it won't work. The transfer won't work, and the Shomer will not be able to keep the double payment should the thief get caught. However, according to the first answer of Rava, that this is yours from now, that works fine, because at the time of the transfer, that's the original transfer, that the owner says, here's the cow, and this will be a full, if it gets stolen and you pay me, this is a full transfer entirely to you. So then it doesn't matter if it's in the marsh the entire time afterwards, that transfer will work. Oh, good. Next part of the Mishnah. Shilem velo rasa li shava. Mishnah said, if the Shomer pays and says, I don't want to make a vow, even though really it was lost or stolen and I shouldn't have to pay, but then I have to make a vow to prove it, I'd rather pay. Then the Shomer collects double. Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Lo shilem shilem amash. Ela kevan she amar hareni meshalem afapi shelo shilem. Rabbi Yochanan says, when the Mishnah says that if the Shomer pays, then he acquires the animal and acquires the right to take double, that's not literally paying, even if he didn't pay yet, but he said, I want to pay. Right? He says, I will pay you for it, even if he didn't actually pay, just by saying that, already he acquires the rights of the owner, rights of ownership, and he can collect double. That's Rabbi Yochanan's chidush. And that's what we're going to question in the next few statements. Tenan. Can we prove this from our very Mishnah? Mishnah says, Shilem v'lo rasai shava, shilem in, lo shilem lo. The Resh of our Mishnah says, if the Shomer pays, because he doesn't want to take a vow, so that sounds like, if he pays, then he acquires it. But if he didn't pay, even if he said, I'm going to pay, it doesn't count. Ema sefa, nishba v'lo rasai shalem tamad lo rasa, harasa af api shelo shilem, ele mehalek al mishma mina. The sefa, the next case said, let's say the Shomer vows, and he doesn't want to pay. So he makes a vow that this was stolen and I was not negligent. So it sounds from here that the reason why, in that case, he would not get double is because he did not want to pay. But let's say he expressed his wish to pay, then it would work. If he says, I intend to pay, then he would acquire the double. So you see that the second half would prove that Rabbi Yochanan is right. The first half is against Rabbi Yochanan, but the Mishnah is self-contradictory. Basically, Mishnah just doesn't say either way. It leaves a gap for this case. Therefore, we cannot learn either way from this Mishnah. So let's try to prove from somewhere else. Tanya kevated Rabbi Yochanan. Here's a braita that will support Rabbi Yochanan. Hasocher para mechaverov nigneva. Ve'amar hala hareni meshalem. Ve'eni nishba. Ve'achar kach nimsa ganab. Be'shem tashlome kefel lasocher. This braita says, I will pay. So that's a proof for Rabbi Yochanan. Although this Mishnah, this braita is in a slightly different case. We did the case of a Shomer Chinam. Here is a socher, a renter who's paying for the right to use it. So he rents a cow, and then it gets stolen. And he says, listen, I'd rather pay you and not make a vow. And then turns out that the thief is found. So he the double goes to the socher. You see, a socher also can socher is chayav in genevav aveda, but not in onis. If it was onis, like armed robbers come or something out of his control, then he is not liable. So he's saying, listen, really it was onis, but I don't want to make a vow. So you know what? I'll pay you. So and same thing. He gets the double. And here it says, Amar hala had any mishalim. He only said he's going to pay. He didn't actually pay. So that's a support for Rabbi Yochanan. Very good. Now we have a support. Okay, a related statement. Amar af papa. Shomer chinam kevan she amar. Pashati maknele kefela. Diba'e patar nafshe bigneva. Rava seems to also follow Rabbi Yochanan. That is shomer chinam. If he says, I was negligent, right? And therefore I'm going to pay. And so as soon as he says, I am negligent and I will pay, he acquires the right to collect double, because he could have said it was stolen and made a vow and then not paid anything. So therefore the owner says, oh, well, you're paying me instead of making a vow. Okay, you know what? It's yours. Shomer sachar kivan she'amar nigneva maknele kefela dibay patar nafshe bishbura umeta. Same thing regarding a shomer sachar, a paid shomer, who is chayav in genevav aveda. So if he says, it was stolen, I'm liable, I'll pay you. Once he says that, then he gets that shomer can collect the double, because again, if he wanted to, he could have said it broke or it died onus and beyond my control, and he could have made a vow and not paid anything. So he says, I'm willing to pay double. The owner says, well, I'm willing to pay you for the price of it. So the owner says, oh, you're willing to pay and you're not going to make a vow and get out of it. You know what? I accept the money. And you know what? You take the double should the thief be found. That's the first two cases. Rapapa continues with the third case that's different. Sho'el she'omer hareni mishalem lo makni lekefela. B'may hava ale l'miftar nafshe. B'meta mechamat melacha, meta mechamat melacha la'shichiach. Someone who borrows without paying anything, he gets full benefits because he gets to use it and he doesn't have to pay. And let's say it gets stolen and the sho'el says, you know what? I'll pay you for it. He does not acquire the right to collect double. And should the thief be found, the double will go, payment will go to the original owner. Why? Because what else could the Shoel have said? What would be his alibi? He only could have exempted himself if, a Shoel is only exempt if the animal dies during the course of working. While it's working, it was using it normally and it dies. But that kind of case is not common. It's not common for an animal to die while it's working. So it's not quite a believable alibi that he could say. Therefore, basically a shomer has to pay no matter what. So if he comes and tells the original owner, you know what, I'm going to pay you for it, and not swear that it died while it was working, you're not doing the owner a favor, because that is so uncommon that we don't even think about it, and you're going to have to pay no matter what. And therefore, by the Shoel just saying, I will pay, that does not, the owner does not yet want to transfer it. After he actually pays, fine. Then he actually paid for the item. Okay, now he gained ownership for the future rights to collect double. So the difference in going to Rav Papa is, in the first two cases, since the shomer can get out of paying totally by making a vow, and he says, you know what, I will pay you, just by saying that, the original owner says, wow, thanks a lot, you're going to give me my payment back, the capital, I transfer you to you from now the right to collect double. So once the thief is found, the shomer keeps it, but the shoel, he's going to have to pay anyway. So his promise to pay is not going to prompt the original owner to transfer over the rights for double. That's all one version of Rav Papa. In that version, the first two cases of the two shomrim follow Rabbi Yochanan's statement that just by saying you will pay, already it's transferred, but Rabbi Yochanan does not apply to the shoel. In this version, all three cases are the same. Rav Papa says, also a shoel, since once he says, I plan to pay you, then the owner agrees to transfer over the right to collect double, because if the shoel wanted, he could have said it died while it was working. working. And even if it's not common, but it could happen. And so he could have gone out the other way. So the original owner is happy that he's going to get paid. And so even the promise to pay is sufficient. Amar le Rav Zavid, Hachi Amar Abaye, Shoel Ad Sheyeshalem, Mai Tama, Ahoil V'chol Hana'a Shelo, B'dibura La Makni Le Kefela. Rav Zavid argues against Rav Papa, and he says, Abaye taught me that a Shoel does not get the right to collect double until he actually pays. Why? Because a Shoel gets all the benefit. He gets to use it without paying rent or anything. So therefore, just with words, just a statement that I plan to pay you, that is not sufficient to prompt the original owner to transfer over the right to pay double, right? You got all the benefits without paying anything. No, if it's found, I want to keep the double. And your statement, I plan to pay you, is not impressing me at all. And that therefore it's different. So you see that the Rav Zavid's opinion is like the first version of Rav Papa. And the second version, Rav Papa says all three followed Rabbi Yochanan, but Rav Zavid disagrees. Tanya kevated Rav Zavid. We have a braita that supports this last statement of Rav Zavid. Hashol pada mechaverov nigneva bekidem hashoel v'shilem v'achar kach nimsah ganav meshalem tashome kefel lashoel. Someone borrows a cow from his friend, borrows and uses, and then it gets stolen. And then the Shoel pays, right? Kidem. He went, he says, no, I'm just going to pay. You don't have to bother suing me. I'm happy to pay for it. And I'm not going to use any other excuse. And then the thief is found. Then the double goes to the Shoel. So you see that it's only because he already paid. If he only promised to pay, then he wouldn't get it. L'dishma kama Now, according to the first version of Rapapa, this braita would be consistent because in the first version of Rapapa, Rapapa agreed that the Shoel only collects the double when he actually pays. So then this would be consistent. But according to the second version, where this is a proof for Rav Zavid, this braita would seem to go against Rav Papa, is it? Amar lach Rav Papa, mi alima matnitin dekatan nishilem veokim na ma'amar, hachinami be'amar. Rav Papa says, what, is this Braita have any greater authority than the Mishnah? The Mishnah does not. The Mishnah has greater authority. And in the Mishnah, even though it said the word shilem, we interpreted it to mean he said he will pay, and that's sufficient for that shomer chinam in the case of the Mishnah to collect double. So here also in this Braita, even though it says the word vishilem, I can interpret that to mean that he said he will pay, even if he didn't actually pay. So it's consistent with what I said over here in this the second version of Rav Papa. But we challenge that. Midame hatam lo kadani kidem, hacha katane kidem. My kidem, kidem ve'amar. So we challenge Rav Papa. No, but in this baraita it says also the word kidem. He went ahead and paid. So kidem means he went ahead and on his own and he said, I'm going to pay. So doesn't that suggest that he actually paid, right? He didn't make any excuses or anything. Doesn't that mean that he actually paid? And so the papa could answer, no. What does kidem mean? He went ahead and said, right? He volunteered to say, I will pay. But doesn't mean that he actually paid. Yeah, look at the series of baraitot, where for shomer sachar, it says the word ve'amar, meaning he only said. But for the braita of Shoel that we just quoted, it says kidem and shilem. So you see that the language is different in both. Doesn't that mean that for Socher, he only promised to pay, but for Shoel, he actually paid? So it does seem like that. But we said, maybe we can get out of it. Midi gabe hadadeh tanya. Were these two braitot recited together? Do they come from the same source back to back that we should compare the language? Maybe they're independent sources. And if independent sources, they might just have different styles. And both of them mean that he only promised to pay, didn't actually pay. So they went and checked the source. Shailin hu letanae deber bichiyav deber bi oshaya v'amri gabeh adadeh tanyan. All these baraitot were memorized. This is a good proof that they're memorized. They can't go and check a manuscript. They're not written. So they go to the source, which is from the school of bichiyav and the school of bi oshaya. These are schools where they memorized these collections of baraitot. And they asked them, these two baraitot, are they back-to-back? Are they part of one source? Or are they from separate sources? And they said, they're taught together. And therefore, it is appropriate to compare the language of both and to infer that in a shomer sachar, that's where, or socher, that's where he says he said he will pay. But for a shoel, it means he actually paid. And so, in fact, this baraita would be a proof for the bizera. And it would be a challenge to the second version of Rav Papa. Next, Pishita. Amad eni meshalem, chazav amad had eni meshalem, hak amad had eni meshalem. Let's say back to a regular case of a shomer chinam. And first he says, I'm not paying. I'll take a vow and I don't want to pay. And then he changes his mind, says, you know what? I will pay. So then we follow the second thing he said, because he changed his mind and he says he's going to pay. So then if the thief gets found, then the double goes to the shomer. That we know. So that's the only answer we're going to have. The rest of them now are difficulties. Ela amar hareni meshalem, echazav amar ani meshalem, mai. What if it's the other way around? First he says, the shomer chinam says, I will pay. And that means he acquires the right to get double. But then he says, I'm not paying. How do we interpret that second statement? Mi amrina mi hadar kama hadar be? Is he changing his mind and therefore he's saying, you know what? I don't want the double. Take it back. And therefore he would not get the double. Or is he remaining in his proposal and his intent to pay, but he's just buying time? It's, listen, I just said I'm going to pay, but I don't have the money right now. So he's thinking, how am I going to delay? He says, oh, listen, I'm not going to pay. But really, he doesn't mind. He's going to pay in 2 days when he gets the money. And so, therefore, the transfer of the double will still go to the shomer, and the shomer can collect the double. Amar hareni meshalem umet. V'amru banav en anu meshalemin. Mai. New case. What if the shomer says, I will pay. Before he actually paid, he died. And then the heirs, the son, said, no, we're not paying. How do we interpret that? Mi amrina mehadar kahadru behu, o dima bimilita dabuhon kaime, vedachu yehu deka madhu le. Do we understand the statement of the sons to mean that they changed their mind? And says, listen, my father agreed to pay, but we didn't agree to pay, so we're not accepting the double, and therefore they would not collect the double. Or do they intend to fulfill their father's statement, then they're going to pay, but they're buying time, and that's why they said we're not going to pay. But really, they will continue to get double. Shilemu banim mai. What if the sons paid? Masi amar lehu ki aknai kefela labuchon da'abad li niyach nafshai leditchula odima lashena. In this case, the owner of the cow gives over his cow to a shomer to watch for him, and it gets stolen. The shomer says, "I intend to pay you." Right, I'm not going to argue that it was lost and stolen. I'll just pay. But then he dies before he gets a chance to pay. And the sons then pay the owner of the cow. So what do we do with that? Can the owner of the cow say, listen, when I transferred the rights to collect the double payment, I did it for your father because he did what was pleasing to me. I was friends with your father. He always was good to me. And so I said, you know what? Oh, you're paying. You keep the double. I did that for your father. But for you, I didn't make that deal. I would not have given it over. And so therefore, I didn't agree to that deal. And even though you paid, but I intend to keep the double payment. Or do we say there's no difference? Once the original owner agreed, and he would agree because he got paid the single amount, the shomer agreed to pay, and he says, okay, you agreed to pay? Fine, you can collect the double. Then it should continue also for his sons when the sons continue what their father had promised. Shilem lebanim mai. Now, here's a case where the original owner of the cow died, but before that, the cow was stolen, and the shomer told the father, the original owner of the cow, that we will pay. But now they died, and the shomer now pays the single amount to the son of the original owner of the cow. What do we say in that case? Masu amrile כי אקני לך אבונה כפלה דאבדת לה נייח נפשה אבל ענה נדידן לה. Can the sons of the original owner say that our father agreed to give you double because he liked you, but we don't have that relationship with you, and so we never agreed to transfer you to the double, and even though you, Shomer, you said that you're going to pay, that doesn't obligate us. Do we say that? O Dilma lo shena, shilamu banim lebanim mai, or do we say it doesn't make a difference since the original owner would have transferred the double to the Shomer, so the same continues with the sons, and they also transfer over the right to collect double. And if you say that, let's say both die. You have an owner of a cow. He gives the cow to a shomer, and it dies. And he says, you know what? I'm going to pay you. But then, before the payment goes through, both the owner of the cow dies and the shomer dies, and now the sons are dealing with the sons, and they pay. Do we assume that the heirs of the owner of the cow will agree to transfer the right to collect double to the sons of the shomer or not? And how about shilem mechasa mai? Shal shite farot v'shilem achad mehen mai? Shal min ashutafin v'shilem lechad mehen mai? Let's say you have one cow worth $1,000, and he gives it to a shomer, and it gets stolen. Shomer says, I pay you Shomer pays 500. That's it. So what does that mean? He paid 500. Does he intend to pay the rest, but he didn't pay the rest? Do we assume that he intends to pay the rest and he already gets transferred the right to collect double, or not until he pays the entire thing? What about if he said, can you watch these two cows, and both cows get stolen, and now the Shomer pays for the value of one of the cows? What is that? Is that a partial payment and he intends to pay the rest of it, or he's only paying for one of them and he's not going to pay for the other one? Or if the Shomer borrows from two people that own a cow in partnership, and he paid one of the partners but not the other, or the other way around, Shutafin Shasha'alu V'Shilem Echad Mehen Mai, two people borrow a cow from one person, one of the borrowers paid and the other didn't, and now it gets found. Who gets the double? Shal mina isha v'shilem leba'ala mai, isha shesha'ala v'shilem ba'ala mai tekum. If someone borrowed from a wife, and the shomer then paid the husband, well, so could we assume that the husband taking the money means that now the husband can transfer the right to collect the double, even though the animal belonged to the wife? Or let's say a woman is the one that borrows the cow, and then it gets stolen, and the husband pays for her. Does that count as payment, that as if she paid, and then she gets the right to collect the double? Or no, she's the one that borrowed, and therefore the husband paying does not count. Teko, all these are questions that we leave unanswered. Amar Rav Huna, Mashbin oto shiva shena birshuto, mai tama chashinan shema. And Rav Natan Ba, Rav Huna says that the Shomer, in addition, let's say he wants to take a vow and not pay, he not only has to make a vow, let's say Shomer Chinam, he has to vow that he was not negligent, he also has to make another vow that the item is not in his possession, that in fact was stolen. Why? Because we worry, maybe he looked at this cow, he says, oh, what a nice cow, you know what, I think I'll keep it. And then I'll just say it was lost or stolen, and then I can keep it even without paying. So he has to make a second vow that he also does not have it. He didn't steal it himself. That is Rav Huna's law. Now we're going to ask a question on Rav Huna's law, but this question is only going to come to fruition after we quote a long Mishnah and analyze that Mishnah. So that's what we'll do now. We're actually not even going to get to the answer today. But at least we'll set up the question. Metibe hamavet chaveru mashkon ve'abad mashkon ve'amar lo sela helviticha alav shekel hayashave v'hala amer lo ki ela sela helvitani alav sela hayashave patur. This is a Mishnah in Masechet Shavuot. Someone lends someone else money with a collateral. He could take the lender, Malveh takes the collateral. And now that collateral was lost. Now there's different claims about how much the collateral was worth. So the Malveh says, I lent you one selah, but they said the collateral was only worth one shekel. Shekel is worth half of a selah. And therefore, okay, I lost it. That's my problem. But you still owe me another shekel, the maveh says. But the loveh says, hala omer, no. Rather, I agree with the amount of the loan. You lent me a selah, but that collateral was also worth a selah. So I owe you nothing. So here we have amosim achavero ala varaya. The maveh would have to prove that, in fact, the loveh still owes money, and the loveh, therefore, does not pay anything, and he doesn't have to make a vow either, because he denies the entire claim. This is as opposed to the next case, Sela hilviticha alav shekel hayashaveh halomed loki, ela sela hilvitani alav shelosha dinarim hayashaveh chayav. The beginning is the same. The maveh says, I lent you a sela, and the collateral was worth one shekel only, which is half, so you owe me another shekel. The loveh says, no, you lent me one selah, but the collateral I gave you was not worth only half, it was worth three quarters of the amount. So I don't owe you one shekel, but only one dinar, only a quarter of a selah. So this is modeh b'miksat, and that's the law. Modeh b'miksat has to make a vow, he doesn't have to pay anything, but he has to make a vow that he doesn't, that only he only owes a quarter and not the half that is being claimed. Okay, that's all. That's case number one and two. Cases three and four, flip it around. Sel helvitani alav shenaim hayashaveh. Here the loveh says, the borrower says, you lent me a selah, and the collateral I gave you was worth two selah. I gave you a collateral that was worth double the original loan, and therefore the loveh says, you owe me one selah. V'hala omer lo ki ela selah bitani alav selah ya shaveh patur. But the malveh says, I lent you a selah, and the collateral is only worth a selah, and therefore we're even. So in that case, the malveh does not have to pay anything. Let the loveh prove that the collateral was worth two selah. Last case, selah halvitani alav shenaim hayashaveh. Halomer lo ki ela selah halvitani alav hamisha dinim hayashaveh chayav. The loveh says the same thing. You lent me a selah. I gave you collateral worth double, so you owe me one selah. And the lo malveh says, no, I lent you a selah, and the collateral is only worth one and a quarter, five dinarim. Four dinarim is one selah. So therefore, I only owe you one dinar. So then in that case, the malveh has to make a vow because he's modeh b'miksat. The claim is a whole selah. He agrees that he owes a quarter of a selah. So he has to make a vow that he owes only a quarter of a selah. Now, the Mishnah concludes, mi nishba, who should make the vow? Misha pikadon eslo, shema yishaba zev yosi hala et pikadon. The always should be whoever has the collateral, meaning the malveh. He always has the collateral. He's the one that should make the vow. Because if the loveh would make the vow, then we worry that the loveh is going to make a vow about how much it was. Then the malveh will produce the collateral and he'll say, oh, I found it, or I had it the whole time. And he may prove the loveh wrong. We don't want to set up a situation where the loveh will make a vow and it'll end up being proven wrong because the malveh will in the end say, realize that he has the collateral all along. And therefore, better to make the malveh take this vow of modeh b'miksat, so that before he makes the vow, he'll be like, listen, before I make the vow that was worth this much, I better really check to make sure that the collateral is totally gone, because I wouldn't want myself to be contradicted. So therefore, the malveh should take the vow. Now, that's the end of the Mishnah. Gemara is going to say, ahaya, this last clause of the Mishnah, which clause of the previous four cases is it modifying? It could only be the modifying either cases 2 or 4, because in 2 or 4 there's a modem miksat there and there is a vow. In 1 and 3 there's no vow because there's a denial of the entire amount. So which one is it? Is it 2 or 4? Let's see. Let's try number 4, ilema asifa, the very last case. Vetepuk le deshwa gabe milvehi vehadeha ka modem miksat ta'ana ela mar shimuel aresha. If it's talking about the last case where the borrower says, I gave you a collateral worth two and you owe me. And he says, no, I only owe you a quarter of it. And now the chidush is that what? That the malveh has to make a vow? Well, obviously the malveh is the one that is modeh b'miksat. All right. So we could figure this out on our own from the basic Torah law. This is modeh b'miksat. So it can't be that it says, who would make a vow? The malveh, because he has the pikadon. That's who we would expect to take the vow anyway. Rather, it must be that this the last clause is modifying the resha, meaning the second case, asefa de resha, right? The second clause of the first half. Sela halviticha alav shekel hayashaveh. Hala meloki ela sela halvitani alav shelosha dinarim hayashaveh chayav. Teshua gabe lovehu v'amur rabanan lishtaba malve shema yishaba zev yosi hala et hapikadon. And so we remind you of the case is where the malve said, I lent you one sela, and with a collateral, but the collateral is only worth one shekel, which is half, and therefore you owe me the other half, one shekel. Whereas the love makes a counterclaim, no, not true. It's true, I borrowed a sela from you, but the collateral is worth three quarters of a sela. I only owe you a quarter. And so who would make the vow? Well, normally the loveh is the modeh b'miksat, so it would make sense that in the Torah law the loveh would make the vow. And now the rabbis at the end of the Mishnah says, yeah, but in this case we're not going to say so. Let the malveh may be the one to make the vow about how much the collateral is worth, because if the loveh makes a vow and then the malveh produces the actual deposit, then he'll be found to be a liar, and we don't want to set up such a situation. Okay, that is the analysis of the Mishnah. And now here is why it's relevant to Rav Huna. Ve'im ita l'Rav Huna, kevan d'mishteva malveh she'ena birshuto, hechi maseh mapik la. According to Rav Huna, he says that whoever has the collateral, whoever has an item, should vow that he doesn't have it in his possession. So here, since the malveh is going to make a vow, needs to make a vow that it's not in his possession, how could he possibly then produce it? Why are the rabbis worried that, the malveh might produce it? Don't have to worry about that. The malveh is going to make a vow that I don't have it, because we worry. Otherwise, he might have pocketed it. Since we don't have to worry about that, so the loveh could make the normal modeh b'miksat vow. And so you see this Mishnah and the analysis. After the analysis of the Mishnah, does not make sense according to Rav Huna. Amar Rav Ashi, yesh edim shenisrefa. Rav is going to answer that. We're talking about a case where witnesses say the collateral was burnt, and that's why the malveh does not need to make a vow. We're going to follow up on this answer and challenge it, and then offer some other answers as well on the next daf. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen ve'amen.